Well, good afternoon, 360 coaching clients and followers out there. This is your host, John Christmas the Fourth, coming at you with a very exciting one. I told you we were going to be able to get Mr. Mario Soto, sports psych guru, on here today. So, you know, sitting down with him, I'm just going to let this thing kind of go as much as we can into him. So, Mario, introduce yourself to all the followers out there and, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, wow. Where do I go from there? Background, sports psychology consulting. I've had the privilege of getting embraced in the world of the athlete and meeting some phenomenal people, people that are at the top of their food chain, if you will. And it's very humbling that they would actually reach out to somebody like me and say, I want your help to make me a little better. And I get to do that every day, which is really special. It's not work. It is a privilege. And, you know, there are times, like right now, my throat's a little raw because I've been working it. But, man, I'm very blessed. I mean, truly, truly blessed.
Well, you mentioned that a lot in the passion, and I think that's so important. So, you know why you probably do it well. Describe your why power a little bit more, because we talk a lot about that. Tell me a little about yours.
You know, it's fascinating you talk about that, because for me, the why is the well at which the person's spirit and soul resides. And if I'm going to work with a client, be it a pro athlete, an amateur, an Olympian, or even an eight-year-old prodigy, I'm going to go to them, and then I'm going to go to their inner circle, and I'm going to ask, what is your motivation? I'm meeting with a swimmer later today, and the parents called me, and I said, all right, why do you think they want to work with me? Or is it something that you're pushing? Because I can inspire you. I can give you great stories. I can kind of cultivate an environment like a coach to make you want to do a little bit more, but I can't motivate you. I can inspire you, but I can't motivate you. The motivation is the why. For me, it's about changing lives. I mean, at the heart of who I am, I'm a service-oriented person. And I love knowing that maybe I played a small part in helping someone move the needle in the right direction, no matter how small it is. And I think I knew that early on when I was a kid growing up, in the various lives that I led up to becoming a sports psychology consultant. But yeah, at the end of the day, what really refuels my battery and in my spirit is knowing that I help somebody in this journey of theirs to get better.
And that's really, you know, speaks a lot to who you are. Yeah. And I think that's awesome that your personality matches what you do, which is not common in a lot of the things that are out there today with coaching or in maybe just people's lives.
Well, I agree with you, because ultimately you gotta be happy. You should be. We only have one life. So why should you be miserable doing what you're doing? Why should you be a slave to your craft or to your job or to your boss or to your family? Because I don't know about you, I don't want to be miserable. And I don't want to be and give off a miserable energy to those who I love in my inner circle. So I try and wake up every morning with an appreciation of where I am, who I am, what I get to do. And I take that with me to my work, my craft. And I have a responsibility to myself to live life fully and to get my athletes, the people I'm honored to, you know, be invited into their door, into their home, to work with and be a part of their life, to hold them to that same standard. Because if you're not happy, then you need to ask yourself, why are you struggling and why are you choosing to do what you do? That ties back into the why. Because if you have a powerful why, it'll help you get through some of the crap.
Yeah, and I think that's so often we'll deal too much with the crap and the stuff that's the miscellaneous, not focusing on maybe one thing we should do.
Yeah.
Because we speak a lot to, if we can do one thing, what can you do? And why would you do that? And that's really important. So when you're in a coaching client, would you lay it out? You know, how do you, when you first meet someone, let's say, and you have a coaching client or you have anybody in front of you, whether it be a pro athlete to the high school one, how does a typical session for you look? Like, would you, you know, coach them for an hour? Do you coach them for a day? You know, how does it look?
I, you know, first I try and have at least some kind of phone interview or phone consult, if you will. I do my assessment. I ask questions. Hey, how are you? Tell me a little bit about you. Tell me about why you do what you do, why you participate in this particular sport. What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What are you struggling with? Because typically, at the younger levels, they're coming to me because there's a struggle. I'm either dealing with some kind of issue of confidence. I'm losing my focus. I'm in a slump. It's some kind of performance-related issue. Or the parents might come to me and say, I really see my kid not reaching their potential, and I can't understand it. And they've got it. They've got, quote-unquote, it. But they're not raising, they're not allowing themselves to raise themselves to the level of the bar of whatever whoever's expectation there is, which could be another problem. So that's kind of how it starts. And then that gives me a snapshot of what's going on. And then based on that, I can put on my Columbo hat and start probing and playing detective and asking other leading open-ended questions. That kind of gives me a better sense of what the issue might be, the key issue, because there's typically one big domino that if we hit it, we might affect the others, but can't always get that in one phone call or the first session. So that's how it starts. And then I encourage them to let me watch them practice so I can kind of see what is their work ethic like. What's going on relative to, is the struggle happening in practice or is it just when the lights are on? Are they carrying over certain disciplines and routines that are successful into their performance? Or are they just really messed up and they're so unfocused and allowing so much of life's distractions to get in the way that, man, we got to start over from scratch. So it varies, but in a nutshell, that's kind of how it starts.
Well, and those questions are so important because a lot of, ironically, what you said, we had a huge podcast with a lot of responses coming how success is sequential, kind of like knocking over dominoes. Mm. So when you knock over those questions and you start seeing the athlete or the client open up to you, and you'll see that kind of sequential knocking over of the dominoes, you know, do you find there's a particular question you really see that this is the one domino that when you knock that one over, they really will start kind of telling you what's going on or something deeper maybe?
Wow. Never thought of it that way. And it's interesting. For me, I guess I've looked at it as if I'm going to use the analogy of a surgeon.
Okay.
I don't want to just be a physician and give you a medication or prescription and say, hey, take this and, you know, go on your way or come see me in 6 weeks. No, I'm looking at it more from a sense of urgency. I want to really find what the source of the issue is to really have an impact. If I'm working with you three years later, you know, and down the road we haven't solved your performance issue, I'm robbing you of your money. And I at the core of who I am, I can't do that. I cannot justify that. There are people out there who maybe they think differently. That's not me. My job, if you're going to come to me and you're going to honor me with your trust and ask me for your help, I got to give you all of me. And so that's my job. So, but relative to this concept of the big domino, it'd be great if we can find it and identify it. It's not always that easy.
Yeah.
We got to do some digging and some searching. And if I can get the athlete to do some pause and reflecting, some soul searching, and have that self-discovery where they find it, they have that aha moment, wow, now you know you have a better chance of success in replacing the bad habit with a better habit, as opposed to me constantly trying to coach and feed and prod and maybe doing a little praying that it might stick.
Absolutely. And that moment's important. And it's hard to find sometimes. I constantly coach the reality that I can't find it sometimes. It needs to come from inside of someone else. And
no
that
question.
Is a struggle for some. It was for me when I was going through that journey myself of self-discovery, my aha moment. And that was important. But, you know, much like I tell a lot of the listeners and followers out there, who or what influenced you to really seek out specifically sports psych, because it's such a unique niche and it is hard to find, and it is hard to really find the people that know how to do it well.
Wow. It starts, how much time do we have? I have been on a lifelong journey of discovery, self-realization. I started out as an athlete wanting to play college sports. I had that taken away from me. That profound, seminal experience where, A, I wasn't allowed to try out for a team that I just wanted a chance for, thought I was good enough to play at a major D1 institution back in Indiana. And for someone to say no, just really impacted me. Went through depression, went through moments there where I was like, all right, well, what do I do now? I have a change of identity. Something similar that when an athlete experiences an injury, and it's a career-ending injury, now you've got to wonder, or you experience, what do I do? My kryptonite has been dropped in my lap, and I'm no longer Superman. I have to get a real job. I can't play my sport anymore. Then I tried out for the baseball team. Very first ground ball hit to me, first base. It bounces off the lip of the grass and smacks me in the eye, knocks me out, fractures my orbital socket. And I then start developing this little fear of, you know, not wanting to stay in the pocket to pick up ground ball. So that was the beginning of a journey that I never realized was going to eventually lead me to questioning, why do people lose their confidence? Why do certain athletes rise to the level of the occasion where others kind of just want to drift into the shadows? Then eventually I became a father. And in my business world, I started doing a lot of public seminars. I started doing a lot of public speaking, corporate videos. And there were times when I'd get a little deer in the headlights, where I would freeze and I couldn't understand why. Part of it is because I was so worried about what people were thinking of me. And all those things are performance issues. All of those things are part of the journey that so many athletes go through. And not just athletes, human beings, regardless of the field of sport or field of work that you're in. And so I started doing some research on that because it was really fascinating. Why am I going through this? Then when I became a father, I saw my kids kind of going through a little bit of this journey of questioning their confidence. Well, am I influencing that in a positive or negative way? Which then led me to Dr. Ken Revizza. Ken is arguably, in my opinion, if you were to name the top three sports psychologists, his name is there. I don't know if it would interchange everyone, but Ken Revizza is there. And I picked up the phone, not knowing anything about this field, but doing a little research and seeing his name and asking him, hey, can I talk to you? I'm a dad, I have all these curious questions. I shared with him what I did at the time. He said, yeah, come on in. Led me to an opportunity to meet him, sit in one of his graduate classes, begin the discussion. The next thing I know, I'm leading the discussion, you know, and 2-3 hours later, we sit and we talk some more, invites me back. I remember going home that night saying, wow, what a cool gig. This guy gets to do this. And I've always been a teacher at heart. I've always loved sharing stories. And that began a journey into this field that changed not only my life, it changed my life professionally, it changed my life personally, it changed and helped me become a better father, a better husband, and I think find my destiny. Truly, truly. And I really owe him a thanks isn't enough. Because if it had not been for him, I may not have found this gem that I think I was kind of born to do. Or if not born, through my various journeys and paths, it's led me to this.
Well, and I get lucky enough, so for those listeners out there, the way I know Mario is I got to see that because I was in that sports psych class that Ken Revizza was teaching when I was at Cal State Fullerton. So I was lucky enough to see two great sports psych coaches in practice. So it was lucky for me to see all those things. And so I guess the main thing I always like asking too, when you made this journey and you got influenced by Ken, you know, how is it you take what he gave you and now you transfer it to working with teams or working with organizations? You know, how do you take what he taught and then apply it?
That's where I think I've had an advantage, if you will, over, let's say, other people who've come through the program. When I was a grad student under Ken, I was an older person. I wasn't an 18-year-old snot-nosed kid who just got, you know, started his undergrad or began his graduate work. So my life experiences really helped me see things from a very mature perspective. I wasn't there out of desperation. I was there more, very much out of perspiration. I had so many things that I wanted to do and had already had a vision. But for me, every talk that I give, it comes truly from the heart. I cannot do a canned speech. It just, I can't. Because I think there's enough people out there who have a real strong bullshit meter, and myself included. And if I don't hook you, if I don't speak to your core, I'm wasting your time. And there's a, you know, there's a wonderful Buddhist philosophy. I had heard the Dalai Lama speak eons ago. And there was something about him that was just so magical, and it just radiated this energy. And when I started doing a little bit of research, and I had a friend who actually was a very devout Buddhist, and he said, one of the Buddhist philosophies is that when they speak to you, you are the most important person in their world, in the room, in that moment. And when I started taking counseling courses and really starting to understand this as a craft, I realized that no matter what I'm doing, if I'm with a client, if I'm with someone, my phone's got to be off, or at least on vibrate. And for that hour, hour and a half, that person has to be the most important person in my life. And that helps the discipline of teaching how to deal with distractions. So I had had that already. I had already had a foundation of what family is and how important that is to me. Not wasting my time, but being as productive as I could to try and get up and get on the street and start running as opposed to crawling. You know, one of the, I think, biggest discouraging things I had ever heard as a grad student was, it's going to take you a long time before you can maybe make money at this or be successful. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm already older than the average bear. I got kids, I got a mortgage, I don't have that kind of time. So when I'm here, I'm here. And I'm going to hold on to every word you say, regardless of who the professor was, because I want to make a living this. I'm all in. It was that, and so many experiences of being married and failing and failure. Let's talk about failure real quick. You're only as good as your failures. And you know, I'm gonna call you out a little bit here, but I'm gonna call myself out here. You know, we got a little gray going on, or a little thinning of the hair, which is, you know, not always pretty to look at, but the reality is we've earned that distinction. We have paid a price to be able to, you know, hold our head up proudly, even though, you know, now we can maybe have to put a little a cap or some sunscreen on to protect the dome. But, you know, you can't shortcut that. And so for me, that's a great advantage. You can't fear what others are doing. You got to own your voice and own who you are. And I had a real good sense of self when I was a grad student, whereas others would look at me and say, wow, how did you have the courage to pick up the phone and call and talk to Freddie Roach? Well, he's no different than you and me. And I got lucky that when I called, he picked up the phone. But I wasn't going to miss out on that opportunity. And I have something that he needs, that I think he wants. So I'm going to present it the same way I'm talking to you and not fear what I have to say. I want to take advantage of this opportunity. Now, the other thing that's really valuable in understanding that is you may not always get a second chance. So you better be really good. And this is true, especially for anybody who's wanting to get in this business. You better make sure you got a great foundation and you really know what the hell you're doing. Because if you go in there with all this ambition and gusto, but you don't have, you're not rock solid in who you are and what you're doing, you're gonna get lopped off at the knees and you'll never get asked back in. So I knew that going in. I knew my strengths. I pretty much knew what my weaknesses were, because by then I had failed enough. And now I had a good battle plan, if you will. And it wasn't filled of fluff, it was filled of substance. When you have that, you stand up a little taller, your voice projects a little deeper, a little stronger, and when you hone that craft, the message then becomes pretty powerful. That is probably what has allowed me to separate myself from my peers.
And I think it's important that a lot of the listeners out there, I made a big thing in a recent conference I went to about failing forward.
Mm.
Using yourself in terms of liberating structures is a book I really like, working with teams and organizations, but they make a big deal about when you're going to fail, at least fail forward. Quitting is what ultimately is going to define someone.
Yeah.
But failure is a good thing as long as you keep going forward with it. So,
so true.
And it leads us into a big one. Like, I always like asking coaches, what is the main ingredient you really coach on the most? Like, if you had to kind of say, okay, we see failure a lot, we see these things, but if you had to coach an area specifically, like recently or overall, what is the thing you coach on the most in anyone?
In an athlete or in a team?
Let's go both. Do both. So if it's an individual or it's a team.
In an athlete, I want to know what routines. Are you aware of your routines? Are you aware, have you taken an inventory of self so that you know what things you're doing on a consistent basis that are helping you be successful? And, you know, with that same, hopefully, level of honesty, are you aware of the routines that are crossing you up, making you trip over your own 2 feet? Because if you can be clear with that and remove the emotion or remove the ego, now we know where you are. We got a baseline. And we can track the path on where you want to go and give you the game plan on how to get there. That, I think, for me is big for athletes. Now, relative to teams or coaches, are you true to your mission statement? And if you haven't made one, then damn it, it's about time we sit down and we do the dirty work. We roll up the sleeves, and then we put not just these words on paper, but we put meaning behind it, and we make sure we hold you accountable to the actions that have to accompany this document. That document should be part of your philosophy. Coaches, do you have a coaching philosophy? If it is, what is it? Talk to me about it. Okay, now that I've heard it, are you holding yourself accountable? And are you holding your players accountable to that standard? And then now let's trickle it down, because the greatest programs, the most successful programs, are the ones that have great leaders. And it's from the top down. And if there's a disconnect, well, now I understand why you're having trouble changing your culture. Now I understand why there's dysfunction in the locker room, or after game, why guys are, you know, going out and getting shit-faced, or they're fighting each other, and you don't know a damn thing about it. It's because you're choosing to be clueless, because you're not being true to your core, to what your philosophy is, or your reasoning for wanting to become the coach you say you wanted to be. It's almost like politics.
It's a lot like politics, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And it's interesting you talk a lot about that plan and that mission, because I do a lot of stuff with time management, figuring out your plan. And really the name of the game came down to me was seeing execution.
Mm.
I think I coach a lot on execution, and I think that's where so many, whether it be a team, an organization, or a company, I think they fail a lot in that area. Now, do you find that to be true in your athletes? And if so, is it true in your team structures? Is there a failure of execution?
You know, I think it's one of the many multiple chains in the or cogs in the chain. Does that make sense? Cogs in a wheel? links in the chain. It's not always the case. But yeah, if you don't have all the parts working, then at some point in time, you're going to fail to execute the plan. Are you honest in the assessment? Lately, I've been absolutely blessed to have had my work take me into the world of the uniformed athlete, and I label that with a loose term when I say uniform athlete. Soldiers, cops, firefighters. I was down in San Marcos yesterday. I'll be there again tomorrow and Thursday. And my work with baseball has kind of led me to this. And the impact I've been able to have on them, and I should say them on me, has been profound. It's helped to validate everything that I believe to be true about performance. These guys are, when the light is on and they're asked to go serve, do their job, they take as much pride as any athlete who steps up into the box and it's the bottom of the ninth and they're trying to win a World Series. or a Manny Pacquiao steps into the ring and he's representing his country. There's no difference. There isn't. The adrenaline is still there. The blood pressure spiked up. You want to perform. Pride and all the hard work, the training, you're trusting. You got a team. It's fascinating to see the similarities. And at the end of the day, they're still human. So they still have a little bit of doubt. They wonder, did I do my job well, et cetera, et cetera. And unfortunately, in the sports world, you get to go home and maybe you had a bad day. You get a bad write-up in the paper. You get some booze. You get stuff like that. It comes with the territory. But you know what? You're paid pretty damn well. In the world of the uniformed cop, soldier, firefighter, now that's not true. But yet they still have those same feelings. They go back after seeing the horrors of what society sometimes puts into their lap. And like an athlete, you know, they try to flush it. They try to let it go. They try and play it one mission, one call at a time. That's not always easy. That's not always, you could strike out, feel embarrassed, look like a little ballerina doing a, you know, pirouette in the box. Man, you fail and you lose a life, or you watch one of your buddies get hurt, there's a little bit of guilt. There's a deeper, profound emotional impact that happens. And I would have never in a million years thought I could have a chance to come full circle and help people like this. Because to go back to my life experiences, my dad started off as a firefighter, ended up as a cop. So when I talk with these gentlemen and women about their world, normally it's a very closed world. And unless you're one of them, you're not allowed in. And when I share my personal story about seeing the stresses of my dad's performance because of the job and the demands of the job through the eyes of me as a child and how it impacted us and how it led to so many other stresses, it's an aha moment for them. They sit and they listen and they lean in a little forward and they're like, oh. And I tell them, I'm not here to call you out, but I'm here to share some of my personal experiences. And in doing that, if I can break the cycle and inform you and educate you by speaking to you as a performance elite athlete, then I'm going to help you get better. Not only on the job, but I'm also going to help you get better and deal with stuff at home. That for me is who I really am at the core. And so I'm going to treat you like an athlete. I'm going to speak to you as though we've signed a contract to work with each other. And I'm going to hold you accountable and I'm going to be brutally honest, whether you like it or not, because that's what I've been hired to do. And at the end of that talk, they have validated for me not only who I am, but I'm doing the right things. Because when I got somebody who comes up to me and says, Mario, I'm on my second or third failed marriage, and what you talk to me about managing the moment before I walk in the door, about leaving my baggage outside, letting go of the call, detaching from that experience so I don't bring it home and dump it unknowingly on my kid or my wife, my loved one waiting for me, I'm realizing I'm doing a bigger service than I realize, and it's greater than me, but it's having an amazing impact. And it's why I wake up every morning and say thank you for allowing me to do what I do.
Well, and I think that's ultimately that pride, passion, happiness goes a lot into this new movement we're starting to see, at least from a lot of the younger people. And now, especially, I don't care whether you're 30, 40, 50, 60, I preach a lot to, if you are truly not happy, you cannot get that back, and time is of the essence. And really a lot of what I tell people is, not only do we get to coach, we get lucky enough to be in the self-improvement field, and not only do we do it to athletes or clients or organizations, you know, I preach a lot to how I self-improve myself each and every day, you know.
Yes.
And I always like asking coaches especially, what is your self-improvement plan, either day by day, week by week, monthly, yearly? Do you have a specific plan built in that you improve?
Oh, you're holding me accountable. Damn. You know what? I love that you said that, because, yeah, I listen, we're not perfect. There's not one of us is. So I don't hold anyone, and I don't expect for them to hold themselves to an unrealistic standard of perfection. But what I do ask that everyone does, myself included, try and move the needle just one little bit every day. Maybe it's not every day. Maybe it's once a week. But do that. Yesterday's talk was about dealing with change and trying to have a balanced life. That's been the latest theme, if you will, in this stress management conversation that I'm having with my firefighters. And so for me, it starts with getting up early in the morning and having that moment of discipline of reflection and appreciation. Then I typically take my dog out for a walk. And if I don't get that in the morning, I know what happens the rest of the day, because the day will just blow up with phone calls, appointments, and then I'm not home and I'm just, you know, I become couch potato. I won't, because I want to spend time with family. Family's critical for me. But I make sure that by the end of the day, regardless of how good, bad the day's been, I appreciate the journey I allowed myself to get on. That for me is enough. Now there's like today. Today was supposedly my day off. Today was going to be my personal day to go work out. Nope, not going to happen. have this conversation with you. I have a phone call at 11 o'clock with an intern. I have two soccer players who want to talk to me. And then I'm going up to Santa Monica to help out a young lady who's a competitive swimmer. So my day has now gone from being a me day to a service day. You got to sometimes be able to be flexible, but I still need to find the moment, no matter if it's 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, to recharge the battery, disconnect, detach, and just and be present. Because when I do that, and I do a little bit of that before I come into every client, I allow myself to be the best version of me so that I can fully honor the person I'm working with. If I don't do that, well, now I'm probably bringing in a distraction and an outside influence in, and that's not allowing me to be true to my mission statement, which is to help you and bring you everything I can to help you become the best version of you for that hour.
And that's so much of what I tell people in time management, is that the great thing about hearing that is that I tell them so often, you have to sometimes embrace the chaos, that when your time may not go the way you want or something else goes, that is a good sign.
Yeah.
Because the reality is you are being wanted. Your time is valuable, but at the same time, embracing that chaos is what I know the success is starting to come for people, myself. Anything else is always, we may have that day off, but sometimes it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
The universe, the good Lord above us, anybody will tell us, okay, it's not going to happen today, but I'll give it to you at another time. So it's interesting that you say that, and to hear it is always great. So I really
like that. It validates who we are and what we want to do, and that we're putting the right message out. One of the biggest things, you know, I talk about technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we fight change, a lot of times it's because we fear certain things. It's our insecurities. And one of the routines that I know we try to honor, my oldest son is coming home tomorrow. He's been a sophomore up and playing basketball in college out in the state of Washington. And for me, family time is precious. It's sacred. And we don't always get a chance to do that, especially when we're all leading such wacky, busy lives, hectic schedules, et cetera, et cetera. But when we go out to dinner, it's a no-phone zone. And you have to do that. And I've had professionals say, well, how do you do that? My business is 24/7. I have clients who are demanding that of me. And I said, no, you're allowing them to demand that of you. Everyone understands you need to have a bathroom break. Everyone understands you need to make time to go eat. So do you not think you're not valid in who you are to pick up the phone and call them later? And through that diatribe that they may be throwing at you, say, well, hold on a minute. I had to take a moment and eat. I had to take a moment and be with my family. When you start validating who you are and give yourself permission to step into your own greatness, you give yourself permission to say no to others while saying yes to yourself. And there's a lot of people who really struggle with that. It doesn't mean they're a bad person. It just means we need to give you a little healthier perspective and a little bit of self-assuredness that you do matter. Let's validate who you are, not invalidate who you are because somebody else has a louder voice or a stronger personality and you feel desperate to have to help this person or do something for them. It's a pitfall. I think you all have to kind of fall into it to understand how uncomfortable it is and then be motivated to learn how to climb out.
And I think that's always a great point, that that self-validation and having that permission to say no. I say that for every great 100 opportunities, you're going to say no to 99 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest coaches, people, successful leaders, etc., they know those things, and they often understand that the way that I got there was my family, my team, my key relationships. So, you know, no matter what world of coaching you're in, it seems to be an ever-going theme that this giving yourself that validation and that permission to say no is so important.
It's everything. Years ago, I heard somebody talk about the wacky aunt who comes over for Thanksgiving dinner every year. And when I say wacky, she's got this abrasive personality who comes over, and when she comes, she now takes over and usurps the energy and the love in the room. And, you know, the kids look at her and like, oh my God, Aunt so-and-so's here. She's got a mustache and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, I hate it when she hugs me. And then, you know, it's like she loses her own boundaries, or the fact that she's stepping into somebody else's home and there are boundaries there. And so at the end of the day, by the time the dinner's even come to the table, everyone is like, oh, looking at their watches, God, how can we get out of here? Instead of enjoying the moment. I say we have failed because we've learned to be so nice and allow those people to override whatever rules of engagement there are. And that's, you know, what's that old saying? You screw me once, shame on you. You screw me twice, shame on me. Well, how many times are we going to keep allowing Aunt Mabel to come in and ruin our party, ruin our moment, ruin our memories before we say, listen, Aunt Mabel, we're not inviting you this year. What do you mean? Well, what happens? We're afraid of pissing them off.
Yep.
Well, wait a minute. Would you rather just put them in check for once, because nobody else had courage to do that, and finally allow yourself to get rid of all that baggage and pressure and enjoy your experience with your family versus just letting them continue to poop all over your carpet and your moment and your meal and your relationships? No one has a right to do that unless you give them permission to. And so we need to, again, validate who we are and learn to say no, and it's okay to say no to other people.
Yeah, and it's that validation that's so important. And you get that really, you know, I coach a lot too. Your key relationships give that to you, your family, your team.
Huge, huge. Your inner circle.
Yep.
You've got to surround yourself with a great inner circle. There was a boxer. I won't mention his name. He recently had a fight. But I worked with him one fight before his big title match, his money fight, if you will. And he had a posse, if you will. This was his inner circle. And I remember going up to Hollywood Hills, and we sat down in the backyard kind of like this. His brother was grilling him his sandwich. He was a chef. And in the back room were all of his boys, and they were playing Xbox, and they were getting high. And they had the window cracked open, and I see this little puff of smoke coming out. And I'm like, all right, listen, I'm already in my 40s. I kind of remember what that was like. Wasn't quite sure, but I could tell. And I said, all right, so-and-so, can we pause for a minute? I need for you to bring your boys out here because I need to say something. So they all come out. Hey, Coach Mario, what's up? And I said, listen, guys, we're all here to serve a role. Sometimes my role is to be the asshole. I'm paid to tell you guys what you need to hear, not what you want to hear, and to help this guy get to from A to B. If I'm not, I'm not honoring you, right? I'm robbing him of his money. And that's not who I am. I want to earn it. And I said, listen, not too long ago, there was another boxer, whose name I won't mention, who won a fight, and then during the pee in the cup moment, tested him positive for marijuana. You know, that's a whole other subject. You know, I think we're starting to ease the rules on that. But nonetheless, in that sport, you get caught with it, you're going to get dinged. And I think he lost 20% of his purse, and I don't remember if he forfeited the belt or not, but nonetheless, it cost him some money. I said, our job is to serve this guy, to help him be the best version that he can be and the best athlete, to be a successful, especially on night of performance. If afterwards you want to go get toked up and do whatever you want to do, great. You celebrate afterwards. But right now, we need to be disciplined. Because right now, there's enough smoke that if I had to go pee in a cup and get tested, I'm probably going to end up showing signs of marijuana through secondhand smoke. And I don't even touch it. Mm-hmm. So you guys right now are not fulfilling your role. It was almost a fight that broke out. Nobody, you know, and it's sad because they don't have enough people who are willing to risk their relationship by being honest. Every day I remind myself, if I need to, I need to risk the relationship because that's my job. I'm not here to kiss your ass. I'm not here to be your friend. Almost like parenting. And this is a conversation I have with parents, especially this generation of parents. Sometimes the role of parent is tough. And you got to be a little nasty, a little firm, and be willing to look at that disappointment in your kid's face because they're calling you all kinds of names underneath their breath. It was never easy to begin with, but you have a responsibility to do it and to do it well so that that kid learns and models from the right behavior and helps to make this world a better place. We've got too many knuckleheads out there, and it's our fault. Our fault, and I'm raising my hand as one of the guilty ones because I'm a parent. So if you don't try and improve every day, you're failing. When you think you know it all, you start dying. Or you start getting passed up, right? I take life, and I don't take life seriously, but I take my job really seriously. And I take the message of getting it out there almost as much as I do my love for my family. And so that passion comes out, and I think it becomes infectious. So people know I'm not a bullshitter. People know it's coming from a core down here, not just because of my, you know, my pocketbook's getting filled. No, it's who I am. And so when I speak to people, I need for them to make sure they know where I'm coming from and what I'm about. And it's taken me a while to get there, to be comfortable in my skin. That's another thing for athletes, especially the younger ones. If they're scared, if they're lacking in confidence, it's probably because they're not comfortable in their skin. So I need to talk to that inner circle of influence, mom, dad, agent, manager, whatever, and say, listen, we got to all be on the same page. I can do my magic with them for an hour, inspire the hell out of them, get them to have the best practice they've ever had. The key is now, how do we repeat it? I need your help now to influence and be part of the solution, not be part of the problem. Where then every time I come back and meet with your kid or with your client, I'm doing damage control. I don't want to keep going two steps back to then take one step forward and then another three steps back to take another step forward. No, let's not do that. Because now you're wasting your time, you're wasting my time. So I don't know where the hell that came from, but but it's about making a difference, and sometimes being brutally honest to everybody in the inner circle. Yeah, that's probably what separates me from others.
And I think it's interesting that, because I've had to have those talks sometimes where you think you're providing a role and it's understood, and then the client will vent to you or do something like that, and you do have to stop them and say, listen, I am not here to be your therapist.
Right.
I'm here to provide you value, and I'm also here to keep you accountable. And it's very hard to make that when you are beginning out because you don't want to lose clients, you don't want to risk things, and it's hard.
And in my role, because I'm not a clinical psychologist, it's an even finer line relative to, you know, what I'm trying to balance between quote-unquote therapist and performance consultant, because you have to listen. And I think we as a society are not good listeners, but if you're going to be great at your craft, you got to listen. And it's not just hearing what the words are. It's watching the body language. It's observing and seeing patterns so you can maybe connect the dots. But there's going to be times when they're going to want to learn how to trust you and want to share personal things with you. And you got to know how to delicately manage and navigate those waters. But as a professional, you got to know what your boundaries are and say, okay, we need to stop here. And you got something really kind of deep, that this is not my area of expertise, but I want you to go speak to this person. And I'm blessed that I've got a big ass Rolodex of some phenomenal specialists in their field, that if a client needs help, I'm gonna go turn him on to this person, et cetera, et cetera. I think you need to have that. So for those people who are beginning this field or starting new in whatever field they're in, it's about relationships and building the relationships and then establishing a level of trust, because you're only as good as your word and the last body of work you did. So if you don't take pride in what you do, don't expect for the phone to be ringing off the hook. And by the same token, if you don't care about them and you're going for just the almighty dollar, well, it's kind of like, what's your investment strategy? Are you going for the short hit or are you going for a long-term retirement fund? One's a lot better than the other. One might give you immediate instant gratification, and that's true of this generation of people, but I'm gonna pass you up when I'm 50 and 60. I'm the one driving the Ferrari.
Yeah.
And I'm the one who's able to afford the tune-up on it, where maybe you were leasing yours, and then it broke down, and you had to turn in the keys.
And I think it's great that you mentioned that, because so often the short-term gains that people want are always going to, and I deal with this so much in coaching, especially when I'm doing health coaching with businesses, and then I transition them to, now that you're healthy, the business will get better, and it always has.
Mm.
But they always want the, well, how do I quick fix it? And it's just not going to happen. It is a long-term goal. It is a long-term plan, and I think it builds into certain companies and organizations or individuals. It doesn't work for everyone, and it is tough.
Yeah, you know, you look at the philosophy of business over the last 20 years. It's the idea of greed is good. We must honor the commitment we have to our shareholders and our board of directors. Okay, so you're buying all these companies so you can make your numbers, but yet you don't have anything of substance. What happens when you can't buy anybody else up anymore? What do you do? What's your new plan for growth? It's, you cannot have a short-term look at and perspective for life. It's got to be longer term. You have to have substance there. And that's certainly true in the world that we're in. Regardless of business, or we're talking about athletes, what are you trying to do and what are your goals, short-term and long-term? You know, if you only have a small window of time left in your career because your body's breaking down on you, let's say I'm Miguel Cotto, okay, I'm having a different conversation with him than I would a kid who's just kind of rising through the ranks or just getting started. And I think we bring, as professionals, a healthy, objective outlook or look into their world so that they can make educated, informed decisions, not emotional ones. That's why in the boxing world, it is critical to have a great manager or corner man there who, yeah, cares about you, but also can honestly see what's happening. And if you're really in danger, he's got to be willing to throw in the towel because he's caring about you 10 years down the road. So you're not shaken and punchy and slurring your words and you're only 28 years old. Can't have that.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because I talk a lot about making an emotional decision versus taking a night. It's even something that I work on myself because I'm reading the book EQ 2.0, the emotional intelligence. I'm working a lot in that because I do sometimes make those quicker decisions using a night to sleep on it, counting to 10 or exercises I work on. And I try to get, you know, as much as I can. Guys, here's how to do this. Give them the books. See if they'll do it. Accountability, again, is what we do, but it's difficult. But those emotional decisions can really be tough to work on because it's who we are.
In the business world, they have the 360 evaluation. Okay, I use that sometimes. I use that with a baseball team, a D3 team out in Riverside. And it was the first time they'd ever gone through that experience. And so I took that concept and then created a blueprint that was a little easier for them to understand. And they loved it. We did it first with the players. We broke them down in various positions with, you know, pitching coaches, infielders, et cetera, et cetera. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? This is the role we see you in. These are the things we need for you to work on. And this is what our expectations are of you. So at the beginning of the season, the very start, player has a real clear understanding of what is and what isn't, of what reality is versus what their assumptions are. Now, if you don't like where you are, here's what you can do to fix it. Go to work. Implies responsibility and accountability now. If 3 months from now the needle hasn't moved, you got nobody else to blame, brother, other than you, the person in the mirror. And I think that clarity is very, very important. Now, to go to bring it to your point, if we're going to help an athlete see, truly see, what they need to do to improve their performance, we need to remove the emotion from the discussion. How do you do that? Well, you have your goal sheet, and you have pros and cons. You're taking in an inventory of what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, a scouting report, if you will. Now I need to put on another sheet of paper, what it is that you want to do or become, and what the sacrifices are. Again, write them down. Don't think about it, because it might become emotional, and all the emotion's going to do is probably muddy up the waters. If you put it on paper, it's very black and white. It's a business plan. Now go and attack it. If you're true to that, over a period of time that's realistic in its time frame, you're going to move the needle. Don't know how far you're going to move it, but you're definitely going to go in the right direction. And I think one of the common themes that I see, especially with younger kids or with parents, too emotional. They're too invested emotionally in it. And rather than loving the kid, which is what they all say they do, and I think as a parent we do, but unfortunately we make the mistake, we're loving them so much that we're choking the love and passion of the sport out of the child without realizing it, or until it's too late.
And that's awesome, because I do want them to get to that state where, listen, step it back for just a little bit.
Yeah.
Take the emotion out. Now what are you left with? And it segues absolutely perfectly into the idea of using an emotion versus a reason list. And I like those a lot. I coach a lot on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, for athletes or for businessmen or for, you know, patients or anybody, that could be a huge game changer for me, and it always has been.
No question. I was in San Bernardino, and I was participating in a huge baseball college scouting combine. And I talked to all the players while they're going in there, you know, going in dugouts, and they're preparing for, you know, their scrimmage. Then I get a chance to talk to all the parents. So I have three sets of three groups. I'm there all day. I'm going to do it again this Sunday. And I had a gentleman, a dad, come up to me. He's from New Mexico. So I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I heard everything you said. Here's my card. I want to fly you out. I want you to come talk to my staff. It's like, really? What did you get out of my talk? Compartmentalizing. Learning how to step into your performance and be ready. Have a routine to be able to do that. When you're there, being dialed in. Letting go of your distractions. Being as present and being outside of yourself so that you are serving the team. And then when you're done, allowing yourself to disconnect, debrief. All the things I work with every athlete on, all the things I work with my soldiers and people in uniform in, something I would talk to you about if you're a client. But you know this already, because it's what you're speaking to. And it's amazing how this concept of sport psychology is not just sport, it is life coaching. And that's kind of what I've been telling people. I said, yeah, you know, sports psychology is my background, but the reality is these are lessons that work on the field and off the field. And if you can learn to embrace these concepts, you've already become a better person. And again, comes back to my philosophy of life. Why do I do what I do? I want to help somebody get better, not just an athlete. Because if you have no character, if you're an asshole, I don't want to work with you. I don't want to help you become a better asshole.
Yeah.
Or a bigger one. I want to help you have better character to help make this world a better place. And because you're on such a stage, if I can help you do that, the impact you have, the ripple effect, is greater than anything I could do as one person. So it's kind of why I do what I do. And when I see it happens, it's huge.
And I think that's the greatest way probably I could, you know, wrap up this whole thing and say, you know, why Mario and I do what we do is We want to inspire others, no matter what it is you have goals for. Mine is really to get you healthier so your business grows, no matter who you are. And it's so important why we do it, because we want to make a better world, a better person, and we make ourselves better in the process. You coach us as much as we coach you. So, Mario, thank you so much for joining us at 360 Coaching. You are an absolute blessing. I am so happy to have you here, because you got to see me when I was fresh-faced in this world, and oh man, I hope I'm making you proud each and every day that I go into the world.
Let me tell you, I'm glad you said that, because you know, my inner circle is sacred. There's only special people allowed to be in it. You, my friend, are there. You lead by example, and that for me is everything. There's a lot of people who talk the talk, they don't walk the walk. I need for you to prove to me that you got the goods and you come from a place of service, commitment, value, before I'm going to turn any of my referrals or clients on to you. And it's funny, because since, you know, we've known each other for, you know, a while now, and you've always called me and you've always been very persistent about reaching out to me. Mario, can I talk to you? Hey, Mario, I'm doing this. And I was like, all right, this kid's got something. I like this kid. You know, listen, everyone's a kid to me. And that's unfortunate. I'm kind of revealing my age now. But you always had it, which is, and now to kind of see where you are now with what you're doing, you know, it's kind of nice, because now I don't want to say I'm proud dad, because I had nothing to do with your success, but it's awesome to see someone else have those same values, have that. I see a little bit of me in you when I was younger, and the job you're doing is awesome. Awesome. The message you're giving out there and how you're doing it, awesome. Because there's a lot of wannabes. There are not a lot of doers. And I think we have that I don't think it's synergy, but that commonality, that common DNA gene that not only serves us, but serves the higher purpose and why we do what we do, why we're passionate about what it is that we do, and why, dare I say it, why we're successful at what we do. So keep doing the doing.
Well, again, guys, this is 360 Coaching. You're with your host, John Christmans IV, with the brilliant Mario Soto. We're going to see you guys next time, and thank you guys so much for always listening in, joining, supporting, and being a part of this great journey. I am John Christmans IV with Mario Soto here, and we are signing off, guys. See you next time.